Hello and welcome to the Carry On Bags Only podcast. I'm your host, Kelsey, and on today's episode, I'm going to take you on an adventure of a lifetime. We're going to dive deep into the world of solo travel, and I'm also going to be interviewing one of my good friends, Jess, who's traveled to a number of places around the world on her own. She's also going to teach us about how you can use dinner plates to assess the size of various different bugs if you're visiting the Amazon. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. So Jess, welcome to the Carry On Bags Only podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
One of the things I wanted to do before we jump into the topic of the episode is I wanted to ask you a couple questions so that the listeners can get to know a little bit more about you. So the first question I have is, what was the first trip you ever did and how old were you?
Oh, okay. So I had to ask my mom about this because I know that I've been traveling since I was really young and I don't actually remember this trip, but apparently I did go to Hawaii. So we went to the island of Oahu when I was 2, and I have like vague memories of that vacation. Like I remember running through a pineapple like field and then like falling and scraping my knee. It was very traumatic, I guess. But yeah, that would have been my first like actual trip where I was like on a plane, left the country. So yeah, 2 years old, Hawaii.
That's hilarious. I'm pretty sure one of my first trips when I was younger was Hawaii and Disneyland.
Yeah, they're classics for children.
Yeah.
That's
that's for sure. And Hawaii is actually one of my favorite places, or like a destination place to go to as well.
Yeah, and it's so close. Having grown up in Vancouver, it's like, what, like a 5-6 hour flight, and it's not too expensive usually. So pretty easy, nice, relaxing, tropical getaway. And like good if you have a 2-year-old who cannot stay on a flight for very long without losing its mind. Yeah. So yeah.
Just got to make sure that they're safe when they're running through the pineapple field.
So. Yeah, I know that. My parents failed me there.
Okay, next question is, how many countries have you visited?
Yeah, so I actually made a list and I think it's around 25 or 26, something like that. I think it's
25. No way.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's way more than me, I'm pretty sure. I actually don't even know how many countries I've visited. I should probably write that down, but
yeah,
definitely not up there.
Yeah, and I think I've reached that point too. Like there's obviously so many more places that I would love to go, but I've definitely started doing repeats on a lot of those places because I just really enjoyed going to certain places and returning and like exploring new parts of the country. Like I've been to Japan like 3 times because I just love it there. But yeah, I think in total, yeah, of unique countries, like it's around 25 or 26, something like that.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Was there anybody who inspired you to get into traveling?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it would be both of my parents, really. Ever since I was little, I mean, I was on a plane at 2, right? Like they always had made travel a really important part of how I grew up, which I'm very incredibly thankful for. Like we did a lot of road trips across Canada and through the States, but we also would fly and go to different places in the States. So I really got this taste of travel from a really young age because they had done it a lot when they were younger and they obviously wanted to share that with their family. And on top of that, I remember watching Lonely Planet travel documentaries like with my mom when I was younger. So that kind of piqued my curiosity. And so it's always been this thing that I've wanted to do. And then once I was an adult and old enough to kind of travel on my own, it was like a no-brainer that that was something that I was going to do. And I haven't really stopped.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. I remember Lonely Planet being such a big thing that we watched.
It was great. Like the old, I think it must have been like, it had to be like in the 90s because I was a child. I like particularly remember being mesmerized by, they did one on Ireland and I remember seeing just like the beautiful greenery. And then I like became obsessed with Ireland and every single book report or like school report that I had to do on like a country, I would always choose Ireland. oddly enough, it's like the one country that I haven't gone to yet, which you think would have, yeah, you think
No
it would have been on the top of my list, but and I want to go there. I haven't yet. So I should just do that.
way. You totally should. I hadn't gone to Ireland before until last year, and then somehow managed to go there twice in a year. Actually, it wasn't last year. I think it was in 2019. Sorry.
Yeah, I would love to go. I have like a good girlfriend who's from Ireland and I joke with her all the time, but I'm like secretly not joking. I'm like, you're gonna take me home with you and then I'm gonna become part of your family and they're gonna adopt me and then I'm just gonna live that like full like Irish like life. They just don't know that I'm coming. Like tell them they have a new daughter because I'm coming.
Well, hopefully they don't listen to the podcast because then they're going to know your
Yeah,
plan.
exactly.
So the other question I was going to ask you was if you have any bucket list trips and if you've knocked any off of your list yet.
I feel like I always have bucket list trips of where I want to go, and it changes because I do end up going to these places and then I find new places that I want to go. So right now, I really love the idea of going to Mongolia. That's kind of always been on my list. I think it's like a fascinating place that not a lot of people go to, and a lot of countryside and open spaces, and then the Mongolian people as well, and how nomadic they are. Just something about it fascinates me. And they have this, it's like an Olympics, but for the nomadic tribes in the country. I would love to be able to go there and see that happen. I think that would be a really cool experience on top of going to just like this country that I've always wanted to go to. So I would say that is probably one of them. I also just am like quite drawn to going to like Namibia and like going and doing the whole sand adventure stuff there. And I don't know, there's so many places, but I think probably that, maybe go back to Europe. I don't know, there's so many.
I'm surprised you didn't say Ireland for your
Well, I
bucket
know
list.
Ireland, but like I feel, I don't know, I keep like pushing it for some reason because there's all these other like places. It really goes with my mood and like what kind of adventure I want to have. And I think while I'm young, I want to do like all that like super adventure-y stuff that like I know that I won't be able to do when I'm older, or maybe like, you know, if you have kids and a family, it might be like a little bit harder to explore. So, trying to tick off some of those spots first. And then your other question was if I have checked off any bucket list stuff, travel stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, so one of these goals that I made for myself was I wanted to go to all the continents by the time I was 30. And I knew Antarctica was going to be really tough because it's incredibly expensive and hard to get to. And there's just like a lot more involved in getting there. So I kind of like gave myself like some leeway there. I was like, if you don't have the finances and the means to like get there, like that's okay. But like try to like hit all the other ones if possible by the time you're 30. And I did. I think the last one that was on my list was Africa. And I did that, I think, when I was actually still 30. So, yeah, that was sort of a weird goal that I had set for myself. But I think what started is I really just wanted to make sure that I was sort of seeing the world and exploring it and not getting comfortable and going to the same places that I really liked. And yeah, it kind of like forced me to research and explore new places that maybe I wouldn't have come across like naturally. So yeah, that was my goal.
Yeah, no, that's really cool because I know we've talked about it and I had the goal and I still have the goal of running the seven continents. It was my goal to start last year. And then obviously with the pandemic, it has postponed a lot of that. But I know we had discussed that Antarctica, if I go, well, when I do go, it's probably one of the last ones I'll do on my list because same reasons, it is expensive to go to. And I know through the Seven Continents Club, who I plan to do it through, there's a bit of a wait list depending on when you sign up. So
Totally.
hopefully we can do it together. But
Cool.
you made a really
Yeah.
good point talking about, just doing things that are going to places that you haven't gone to before because you get comfortable with the places that you've been. And I think that's a really good point to make, because that kind of leads into one of the biggest topics that I wanted to talk about today with solo travel, is just really getting out of your comfort zone and doing things that you wouldn't normally do. I know that there's a huge uptick in solo travel right now. One of the focuses of the episode was going to talk about feeling safe. And I know you've done a number of trips on your own, and so I thought you'd be a really great person to talk to. So one of the things that I wanted to ask you about is, for you to feel safe while you've been traveling, I know you've taken some self-defense classes. So can you tell me a little bit about why you decided to do that?
Yeah, for like a number of reasons. I guess, you know, I have been solo traveling for a while. My first solo trip that I ever took, I was 22. And I remember being absolutely like petrified. And I was in Thailand. So that was my first trip by myself. And yeah, like now in hindsight, I'm like, oh, that's so silly. Like I've been to Thailand now a few times and totally feel comfortable being there and exploring by myself. But at the time I was 22, didn't really know where I was and like didn't really have my bearings, didn't know a single person in that country. And so it was really intimidating for me. And I think, you know, once I got over that and I did more solo trips, I got more and more comfortable. But I would still always find that there were moments where maybe I didn't feel as safe as I wanted to feel. And I think as a woman, yeah, there's a lot of solo travelers out there. I do find that there are more women now, but generally the solo travelers you find are men. And there are just, you know, like safety and like problems that women face that men don't have to face. I'm really the only person who's looking out for me when you're traveling, because you can meet groups of people, but at the end of the day, like you have to have a lot of trust and confidence in like who you are and how to get out of a sticky situation if you find yourself in one and with different cultures and language. It can be a bit tricky. And I was going to some places that, you know, maybe didn't value like women as equals as they do here in Canada. Just like out of abundance of caution, I really wanted to empower myself to feel more confident like when I was traveling by myself, just in case I did find myself in a situation that wasn't ideal. And so this sort of came before going on a big trip where I was going by myself. And I don't know, people love to scare you when you're a solo traveler, especially a woman. Like, I feel like people find out you're going to a certain destination and then they have to tell you about every negative story they've ever heard of that country. And like, oh, like, you know, my brother's, like, boss's uncle's sister went there and had this really terrible experience. And it's like, why did you tell me that? Like, like, are you trying to get me to not go? Or are you just telling me to freak me out? Like, I'm not really sure. And so I find that people just love telling you about all the negative experiences, which is so unfortunate because most of the time the experiences that are positive really outweigh the negative. Anyways, I had kind of let it get in my head before this trip because I was a bit nervous to begin with because I had never been to this continent before. I'd never been to this country and had a lot of people tell me really sketchy stories, and it just like kind of got under my nerves a little bit. And I was like, okay, to make myself feel better, I'm going to see if I can find a self-defense class here and, you know, just like get some knowledge so that I feel a little bit more confident going into this trip. And so that's sort of what started it. And I, yeah, just started looking around locally to see what was out there specifically like for women and sort of during this, like, I think I had like a certain time period that I really wanted to take these self-defense classes because I was going on the trip. That's sort of what started it. I couldn't really find anything that I liked that fit my timeline or like, just like nothing really appealed to me. It all just seemed really kind of aggressive. Like, but it just like, it felt like I had to go to this like martial arts studio and like the timing didn't work. And it just like, nothing was like really suiting like what I actually wanted for myself. I wanted something a little bit more tailored that would just like help me on my travels and also just help me in general, like if I'm walking at night, like to feel a bit more protected.
For
So
sure.
yeah, so that kind of led me to sort of seeking out my own personal like self-defense class and tapping into sort of my greater network to see if there was anyone could help me out.
And did you find
I
something?
did actually. So I have a cousin who is a police officer, and I reached out to her and kind of told her my dilemma and what I was looking for. And she was like, you know what? I work with this guy. He's also like a martial arts, pretty high up guy, but also teaches tactical like defense training, like at, you know, for the police. He would be a really great guy to talk to because I know he also like freelances and does sort of self-defense classes like privately. So she hooked me up with him. Together, we sort of developed intro level, and I needed about, I think, 10 to 12 people to join this self-defense class with me. So basically I was creating my own self-defense class now rather than
No
try yet
way.
rather than trying to find one to join. So I ended up just kind of reaching out to the network of women that I knew here, you know, some travelers, some not, and just sort of said, I have this guy who, you know, is pretty credible. We're trying to put together a self-defense workshop, really intro, like a couple of hours over one day over the weekend. Like, would you be interested? And I mean, the response was overwhelming. There were so many people who were interested in it that I had to like kind of cap it at a certain number.
That's
Yeah. And
awesome.
then, you know, it was really great. I think, you know, he taught us a bunch of really good skills. And what I liked about him is he tailored it sort of to things that were happening actually in the city because he's a cop. He kind of knew, like, you know, what the most valuable techniques and lessons were versus, like, I'm going to teach you this, like, really cool hold. Like, that's not at all what he was about. He's like, listen, like, if someone grabs your wrist, this is how you get out of it. And it seems like such a little thing. It was just so helpful because I found that I used that actually. Like I found myself in a situation where I was traveling and I was in a market and I was a bit surrounded by people and I don't really know because we had a language barrier problem if they were like trying to sell me stuff or if they were like cornering me for some other reason. Either way, I didn't feel totally safe. I remember like using one of the techniques that he had taught me to like get out of a wrist hold and to like sidestep out of like the way of this person. And I don't know that I would have done that exactly like that had I not gone to that class. And it just became natural to me because it was just something that we had practiced in class. And I was able to like kind of get out of this situation where I was kind of cornered and like get out to sort of the safety of where my driver was at the time.
Wow, that's really cool. I
Yeah,
had no
so
idea.
it was like little things. It wasn't like, you know, this is how you put a guy in a chokehold. Like most of the time, it wasn't like, you know, what you see in the movies and stuff. There wasn't like somebody in a costume that we were just like kneeing in the crotch. It was very much like very practical skills, mostly like how do you, one, like get out of a situation to buy yourself more time to like basically escape rather than like fight. I think it was really great, and a lot of women took a lot of stuff away from it, which was just like a nice little bonus, I guess, to my initial like idea of why I wanted to do this.
Yeah, well, and it's really cool to hear that you didn't find something that fit your needs and you were able to research and find something that was customizable, and then to have that many people interested that you had to cap it. That's
Yeah, I mean, we
incredible.
ended up throwing another workshop a few months later because it was so popular. And then I was going to do a third one because I had gotten quite a bit of interest from my workplace and other people that I knew that I was going to host a third workshop. But then I like the pandemic hit and it was all weird. And so obviously we're not doing that, but it's still something that I would really like to continue in the future because I don't know. There's just like so many people who find value in it. Even myself, who I've taken both the workshops, even though he was teaching really similar techniques, it was really nice to have that like refresher course. So I think it's a value of people, even if they've taken one, continue to take them. And yeah, I mean, it was all volunteer from my end, like, and I was really happy to do it. It was really interesting, and it's pretty much volunteer for him as well. But yeah, it was great. It's a great confidence booster.
Yeah, for sure. And to have that, if you're traveling and those instincts just kicking in to be able to be in a situation and to just kind of the reflex of getting out of it, that's really, really cool to hear.
Yeah, I mean, you just don't really know what you're going to get into. Even you can, I mean, and I want to say too, like, I plan a lot, like, in terms of trying to plan out my safety as much as possible, like, from getting drivers and like tapping into my own network to see like who's been there or friends of friends. And for the most part, I've had really wonderful experiences, but like, there is always like a chance that something happens that you're not anticipating. And so basically this self-defense training is for those small percentage of times that something kind of happens that isn't planned.
No, and that's really good advice to say too. And I think for you to say that, you've been in some experiences that maybe weren't so pleasant, but that hasn't hindered you from still wanting to travel. And I'm assuming like you would still travel on your
Oh,
own in the
100%.
future,
Yeah.
right?
It is definitely my favorite way to travel. I mean, there are things that I love about traveling with friends and other people. Like, obviously, experiencing something with, people you're close with is really great. But one thing I love about solo traveling is that it's going to be your perfect trip no matter what, because you get to decide like where you want to go, what you want to do. Like, you're not really having to compromise your itinerary with other people. And you can kind of just be free to do what you want. So you're always going to get the trip that you want because you're doing the thing that you want to do at the end of the day. And I really enjoy that. And I also think when you're by yourself, you are more open to people coming to you, and you also push your own boundaries to be more open with other people. Because you're never alone, even though you are alone technically traveling. I find it's never a lonely experience. A lot of people will ask me, like, why are you going on this trip by yourself? Like, don't you have friends that want to go with you? Or like, aren't you going to be lonely? And I was like, no, you don't understand. Like, it's never lonely. Like, maybe it's lonely for the first day, but plan ahead and you book maybe a hostel or a hotel or like a class or something early on in your trip where you know that you're going to find other like-minded travelers and you make friends, or you just like buck up the courage and you go talk to like a strange group of people that maybe you wouldn't do that back home, but like when you're traveling by yourself, it's either that or like eat dinner by yourself, which is fine sometimes as well. But it kind of pushes
For
you out
sure,
of your
yeah.
comfort zone. And I find, yeah, I've never been alone. I've made a lot of great friends. And then the flip side is like, you've made all these great friends that are from other parts of the world. So then when you want to travel to that country, you can just like call up your new friend and be like, hey, I'm popping in. Like, give me the locals' perspective.
That's so true. I know for me too, traveling alone was never really on my radar. The thought of doing things by myself, like eating by myself or, being by myself, or people would be like, oh, well, why is she alone? And to your point, like, does she have no friends? I know for me, something came over me and I just was like, you know what? I really want to try this. I really want to go and travel somewhere with people that, I've never met and completely do it on my own. And part of that too was, and I don't know if you find this, but it was always hard to find people to just have the ability to go and travel. It was either people couldn't go because of work or they didn't have the money or, they had different plans of what they wanted to do. And I think I just finally got to the point where I was tired of waiting for somebody to travel with me. And I was like, you know
Yeah.
what? I'm just going to go and do it. And it was the best experience I ever had. And it's something that I think if I can, like every year, I'm going to try to at least do a solo trip once a year by myself because
to your point, it's just you get used to these uncomfortable situations and you become comfortable in them and it's not so scary. And you realize, like you said, you meet a ton of other people that are doing it as well. It's just,
yeah, no, exactly been like that for me. And it was funny when you mentioned like, oh, you end up eating by yourself. And there is this like weird fear a lot of people have of like eating by themselves. And like, that shouldn't be a thing. I think it's fine. Like you get to people watch, you can bring a book if you want to. But it actually like made me think of this one time where I was traveling in Southeast Asia by myself and I was in Thailand. So this was the second time I'd been to Thailand. So I was more comfortable with solo travel at this point. And I was sitting in a restaurant in Krabi, which is this like coastal beach town. And there's a lot of backpackers around. But I remember going to this restaurant and I was eating by myself and I was surrounded by like couples. Like it was like everyone had someone to eat with. And the woman who ran the like kitchen came out. She didn't speak a lick of English, only spoke Thai. This lovely older woman just like sat down across from me at dinner so that I didn't have to eat alone. And she just kept me company, but like we didn't really speak to one another because we hadn't speak the same language. She wasn't eating anything. So she literally just sat across from me and like we smiled at each other for like, I don't know, like half an hour at least, like while I ate my dinner. But like, that's what I mean. You're going to be by yourself, but you're never going to be alone because people will like see you and be like, okay, well, like this girl needs a friend. And then they'll come over and just sit with you. Yeah.
That's amazing.
So yeah, I've also been invited to a bunch of like random things that I would not have been invited to had I not been traveling by myself. And like, maybe it's because people feel the need to like take care of you and look after you because you're like a single woman. Because I've asked like if my single like male solo travelers, I've asked them if they've experienced the same and they definitely haven't. There's sometimes, you know, we're talking about all the danger as well, but there's also like really positive, beneficial things that happen. Like I find like people will take me in and then like invite me to their like family's house, like, or like they just like want to take care of you. They're like, it's not safe. Like get in this like rickshaw and I'll take you over here. Like just like above and beyond what they need to do. So yeah. So it's been a good experience.
That's so great. So there's one of your trips that I wanted to talk about because I remember you telling me about it and I just was floored by it. But when you went to the Galapagos Islands.
Yes, the Galapagos. So I had also done that trip by myself. And at the time I didn't speak any Spanish, which was not a smart move. I remember it was like just a really hectic time at work before I booked this trip. And I had bought like a little like English to Spanish dictionary. And I remember like the moment I knew I was like, like in trouble for not knowing Spanish. I was like sitting in the airport. I think I was in Texas somewhere, like catching my connecting flight down to Ecuador. And because they speak Spanish so much in the States, like the bartender at the bar I was like eating at, he spoke Spanish. Notice I was reading this book, ragging on me, be like, you don't know any Spanish and you're going to South America. And now you're sitting at a bar while you wait to get on your connecting flight. You're trying to teach yourself Spanish. And then like a couple of the servers who also knew Spanish, just like they kept just ragging on me. And then they started practicing with me and it was just like the funniest thing. But like again, I don't think that would have happened had I been sitting with a group of people. It was because I was by myself and like clearly reading this Spanish book and these guys are like, I'm just gonna make fun of you.
Oh my gosh, so funny.
I did go to the Galapagos. So I had a few days in Quito, which is the main city where you fly into. And that one I actually did a group tour because it's sort of what you have to do. It's a lot harder to just like get around to the islands by yourself. Like you can. But I also thought, you know, it's easier if I just join a group and then I'll also have like-minded travelers with me. So I ended up signing up for one of those like small group tours, and everyone's kind of in their 20s and 30s, so around the same age as me. Yeah, and then we went to the Galapagos and hit a couple of different islands and did some snorkeling and some diving. And, you know, I think the whole group pretty much got along really well, like all of us. And yeah, it was a really cool experience just to be in these like really famous islands and like wildlife that you can't see anywhere else, really. And just like the sheer abundance of like wildlife. It was crazy.
Well, wasn't there a particular form of wildlife that you saw at night one of the times, or maybe multiple? I don't know.
But outside of your window, that was in the Amazon. So after I did the Galapagos, so I did this trip a little weird. So I did all the like really nice animals first and the like relaxing part. And then I did all the scary animals to really end my trip. And normally people flip it and they do the other way so that they go home relaxed and not like terrified of like every like insect known to man. So I also like, so I was in the Galapagos like with all of these people, and a lot of, because you do this trip, like everyone will go to the Amazon and then go to the Galapagos. So a lot of people that I was on the Galapagos with had already been to the Amazon. So I was hearing all these like horror stories from them about like like the big bugs that were like, you know, in their bed or like what they saw. And so like I like thoroughly like got psyched out while I was on this, like, oh my gosh, like what have I done? And I had signed up. So unlike the group tour that I was on in the Galapagos, I had signed up to stay at this eco lodge for like 3 days in the Amazon, and I was like on my own. So I ended up in the Amazon, and I usually, it's like quite busy, but like it was not very busy. It was like me and like one other woman from the States, and we pretty much had the whole lodge to ourselves. And I had a guide who had grown up in the Amazon, and so he took me out on like some jungle hikes, and he really liked it because he's used to sort of older people and he can't really take them on like hard trails because it's like quite like rugged. Like he was like macheteing like through like the jungle essentially.
Oh wow.
Like it's very wild. Like we were forging our own path, and because I was younger and more fit, he was able to take me on his like favorite trails, which were like a little bit more challenging. And so I remember telling him the first day, I was like, I know there's lots of spiders in there, and I'm just like, want to let you know that I am scared of spiders. And this was, and we had just been in the jungle at the time, and he had been pointing out all the spiders to me. And I was like, I need you to stop pointing out the spiders to me because they don't want to eat them. And I know that this is probably really fascinating to a lot of people, but like, I like need you to not show them to me because they're everywhere. And there was this one spider. Also, this guy was like amazing. He would like stop in the path, and then he would hear a sound and be like, listen. And I would listen, I'd hear nothing because like my ear is not trained like his. And he would dart into like the jungle, come back out with like a teeny tiny frog that was like the size of his like pinky nail. Like I have no idea how even like spotted this like teeny tiny like frog, but he like did it multiple times. I was like, okay, like this is your backyard, like I get it. Like, this is amazing. It's just really weird because you're in this place where all the bugs are like 10 times the size you're like used to. And also like you're going to see things that you don't actually know what they are. Like they don't look like a spider. They don't look like something that you should be scared of. But then like in reality, they're really poisonous. Like I saw a caterpillar and it was like crawling on my arm. And I was like, oh my gosh, like look at this cute fuzzy like caterpillar. And he's like, I'm just gonna remove that with a leaf because that's poisonous. And I was like, oh, okay. So I was staying in this like eco lodge by myself. Like I had my own little cabin, and it had like these mesh screens, and like every night you had to do like a tarantula check like of your bed, because tarantulas really love like climbing in between sheets. And like if you were to get up in the middle of the night to go use the washroom, like they tell you have like a headlamp or, you know, a flashlight to like look on the ground so that you're not like accidentally stepping on a spider or like something that has accidentally crawled into your into your like cabin. And so I kind of knew that they had this spider, it's the banana spider, and it's very deadly. Like the guy told me that they can actually jump, like they're very venomous, they can get to be very, very big. And I was like scared, really scared of these spiders. venomous, they look scary, and they can jump, like excellent. And anyways, one morning I got up to go to the main area where we eat breakfast. Oh, sorry, I was about to get up to go there, and I was getting ready, and I noticed that I heard some sounds to my left, and I look over and I see on the kind of mesh screen of my window, there is a giant spider, and so big that I heard it before I saw it. And its little pincers are moving back and forth. And that's what I was hearing was its little pincers. It was the size of like a dinner plate. Like I'm not exaggerating, like body with legs, size of a dinner plate. It was like the biggest thing I've ever seen. And so I see this. I thankfully had my camera next to me. And so I like used my camera to like zoom in to see, because my worst nightmare is like, is this spider inside or outside? Like, because I kind of don't want to leave if it's inside, because what if it like climbs into like my stuff and I lose sight of it? So I needed to check if it was inside or outside. And so I like took my camera, I like zoomed in to this spider, and I was like, okay, it's outside, I can tell. Left my cabin to go have breakfast. As I'm at breakfast, I'm talking to two of the guides, and I was like, okay, there's a giant spider. It looks like this. Like I took a picture of it and like I showed it to them. I was like, it's on the outside of my cabin. The two guides who have grown up in the Amazon, both of them were like, that's a very aggressive spider and it's a very big one. We're going to come down and look at it after breakfast. So oh, good. I've freaked out.
Wow.
The guys who have grown up here. excellent. Of course, spider on my window after I've like put out into the universe that I don't like spiders. So one of the guys came down and like saw the spider, and he was like, oh yeah, like that's a big spider, and like proceeded to come inside and like basically hit the screen to try and get it off of like just to like delatch from the like mesh. I was screaming so much during it, because it was just like, it was like moving around at that point. It was like trying to hold on for dear life, like onto the like screen as like the guide's trying to like bop it off. And anyways, it was like a very terrifying experience. And then for the like other 2 days that I was there, I was just like constantly scared that this spider was going to seek revenge on me for like disrupting it. And it was like lurking underneath of like the cabin or around it or something. And I was like so scared to like go outside. I don't know that I slept. Like I was convinced this spider was coming back to get me.
That is insane. This, even you just rehashing this story, just
like a lot of weird bugs. Like I saw a giant beetle fly into the woman next to me at dinner, like hit her in the forehead. And it was like, the beetle was like the size of like, oh gosh, I don't even know, like a slightly smaller dinner plate. Like it was giant. It was a bird or a bat. It was just a giant beetle in it. Like the way she described it was so funny that like she made eye contact with it and it like diverted its like journey to come straight into her forehead and like just like whacked her in the face. And wild.
So before we close out the episode, I wanted to do a quick round of rapid fire questions with you. Are you in?
I'm totally in. Let's do
okay
it.
Cool. So the first question I have is, what is the first thing that comes to mind when I say the word travel?
Backpack. Because for the longest time, I only ever really traveled with my backpack, and I've had the same one for almost, actually over 10 years now. So it's been on many, many, many trips with me. And so, yeah, that's the first word.
I love that. I'm pretty sure I have same thing. I have a mech backpack that I've been using, and it's pretty much falling apart at this point, but I can't seem to get rid of it. I love it so much. So I can agree with that. That's awesome. Okay, next question. Do you recline your seat on an airplane?
I half recline. but like sitting totally upright for especially a very long haul flight, you just like, I mean, I can't do it. My old back just can't handle it.
Do you care if the person in front of you reclines their seat?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think within reason, the people that just like full recline, especially like, you know, when you're eating or so, something like that, it's just, it's not a gracious move.
All right. As a traveler, from a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the lowest, 10 being the highest, how do you rate yourself as a traveler?
Oh my gosh. I feel like maybe it's a sliding scale all the time. I don't know. Maybe like a 7. I don't know what the parameters are.
I would say that you're a pretty good traveler.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm not, I don't want to be 10 because like there's always room for improvement. I try to like embrace the culture that I'm in and talk to the locals and, you know, try to really soak in like where I am, but I'm pretty respectful, I think. So yeah, maybe like an 8 then.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
All right. And then what celebrity would you want to be stranded on an island with?
Maybe Chrissy Teigen, because I just feel like she can cook.
Yeah.
And she's funny and entertaining. So she would be like some nice entertainment and maybe practical in terms of cooking.
All right. Last question is, what travel item would you find in your carry-on bag?
Oh, my Kindle for sure. So I am one of those people who used to carry like physical books with me, and I would always have like a really thick like travel book of like whatever destination I was in, and then I would have like a pleasure book or like maybe even 2 pleasure books and a journal to write in, because I'm one of those old school travelers who likes to write in a physical journal. I would always end up with like 4 books with me at any given time, and it just got really heavy. So yeah, I got a Kindle and I put all my books in there. So now I just travel with my Kindle and my journal. So you'll definitely find a Kindle in there. I get a new journal for every trip. And I guess my hope is that, you know, when I'm long gone, maybe someone will find an old trunk or something of my stuff and like find these travel journals and be like, oh, this like Jess girl sounds pretty rad. She ended up on some adventures. So yeah, I always like the physical journaling. Never been much of a online blogger.
Cool. Well, I wanted to give you a big thanks so much for joining us on the episode today. I'm super excited to see what travel you have in store in the coming, hopefully, months. But yeah, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Carry On Bags Only podcast. If you haven't already, hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Until next time, keep calm and carry on.